Blog Talk Radio. It's time again for TFB Tuesdays at 12. Hello there, and welcome again to another episode of TFB and Friends. I'm your host, Gina Crosley Corcoran, a.k.a. The Feminist Breeder, coming to you live from my mom cave in Chicagoland, where I run this bawdy little radio show. Today, I am so very excited to have special guest Andrea Owen, renowned certified professional life coach and author of 52 Ways to Live a Kick-Ass Life. She will be joining us in just a few minutes, at which time you can call in and pick Andrea's brain for free. How often do you get to talk to a certified life coach for free and ask questions and or a renowned author for that matter? Call in. Say hi to us. Now's your chance. Just dial area code 347-215-9651. Once again, that number is 347-215-9651. The way that it works is that you call in and your number will come up on my caller ID screen. And as soon as I have a chance to bring you on, I will say that we have a caller from so-and-so area code. If that's your area code, then you will be able to come on and join us with your comments and questions. But before I bring Andrea on, I wanted to explain why I am so excited to have her. And FYI, by the way, my daughter is in the background somewhere. She's, again, being babysat by a nanny iPad for the hour, as per usual. So if you happen to hear a little voice in the background, that is my daughter, and you may also hear Andrea's daughter because we are moms and professionals, and this is just how we do things here. So I'm sure that you will be forgiving of that. So I'm so excited to have Andrea on today because, well, first of all, I've been kind of internet friends with Andrea for years now. I mean, years and years, since her last child, who's now five, was a baby. And I think even before then, she's a fellow VBAC mom like myself. I feel like that's how we ran into each other online. And then it turns out that we have mutual friends in common. My husband's college friend, like, worked with her in, like in another state. It's just the world is a tiny, tiny place and one degree of separation from everybody, I swear. So I am so excited to finally just be able to talk to her just on a personal level, but on a professional level, I feel like my life right now, and if you read my blog, you know this, that this is kind of all I talk about. It's like one big giant question mark. And I, for one, at this stage in my life, just really need to hear from someone like Andrea, whose job it is to help people navigate through these giant question marks. So I, as you probably know, I just finished grad school, 3 years of my life, and my life was a question mark even before I was done with grad school. I would say that it's been a question mark ever since I started grad school because I got about 6 months into the program, not even my first semester in the program, and thought, oh no, what did I do to my, not just that the program was hard, it was, and it was an exceptionally difficult, intellectually difficult program. However, that wasn't just it. It wasn't that I thought, oh, this is too hard. It was, is this the right thing? And I had already changed my mind once about grad school. I was first going to go to law school and then decided kind of right at the last minute before I was had my undergrad done and was applying for grad schools, I thought, oh no, I don't want to go to law school. Instead, I want to go get my Master of Public Health. And I allowed myself to change my mind and to change directions once. So once I got myself into this prestigious grad school program, I felt really stuck. And I felt like I can't change my mind now, even though I don't know that this is the right place for me. In some ways, it felt like exactly the right place. Like I would go to class and we'd be talking about the epidemiology of breastfeeding rates. I don't really know where else in the world you talk about that except for in an MPH program that deals in maternal and child health. So that in a way was, yes, these are my people and this is my place. However, I couldn't figure out how in the world that degree was going to get me a job or was going to get me the kind of job that I wanted to do. And so now, so I went through this sort of existential crisis a couple of years ago and was like, do I finish this grad school program? I started applying or looking at applying to nursing schools and thought maybe I should do that instead. And I didn't do that. I instead decided I got myself into this mess. I'm gonna stick it out. I don't want to deal with the financial fallout of trying to switch programs again and or just quit school and not have a degree to show for all this money I've spent so far. So I stuck with it. and I finished, and I'm incredibly proud of having done that. However, here I am, and I still have all the same feelings that I did 2 years ago when I was only a year into the program, thinking, what did I do? Where did this take me? What am I going to do with my life? And now that school is over, I don't have school to distract me from all of those big question marks. At least when I was in the program, I thought, okay, I'm too busy kind of right now to really, really obsess about it. But now that I'm done, you can see how I'm spending my time. I'm like doing projects in my daughter's room just to keep my hands busy and my mind from going crazy. And I'm, you know, doing fad diets or whatever to try to, you know, oh, if I cook all day, if I'm in the kitchen all day, keeping my hands busy, then I won't have to think about this existential crisis I'm going through yet again, trying to figure out what I'm doing with my life. So everything is up in the air right now, and I'm feeling lost. And I know from talking to my readers that so many of you guys also feel lost. So who better to have on than someone who has herself been lost and wrote a book about how to get out of it? So that's why Andrea is here with me today, and that's why I'm going to bring her on, and I'm going to let her talk about her book and how she came to write this book and what she does for her clients in her everyday life. So Andrea, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for being here. I am ready to jump in and say like 1,000 things about that story you just told.
Please do. Please talk. Please go for it. And oh, I just one quick housekeeping tip. So when I did this radio show a couple of weeks ago, I got kicked off my own radio show. Like my internet went out. If this happens, stay on and keep talking about something and I'll be right back. Okay. So please jump in and go for it. Say whatever you want to say
yes,
about what
you
I just
too.
Told you.
And I can, you know, cover for you.
Okay.
So much to say about that. I think that, A, and you know, because you have so many readers, is that you're not alone. It's super common, and I think that now more than ever, so many women feel that way because our culture puts so much pressure on us to do more, to be more, to have more. And so what I see sort of screaming from that story you just told is the need for certainty. And trust me, Gina, like I am there with you. I have such a need for control and certainty. Like it is my biggest default behavior that I fall into when we're not sure. Because like we want to know. Like we have this like addiction to control. Like we want to know. We want a guaranteed outcome. Like please, life, bring me your crystal ball and tell me, you know, is the MPH the way I was supposed to go? What is the job I'm going to have? How much is it going to pay me? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because it feels good to know that. And what does life look like? Well, life sure the hell doesn't look like that. It's uncertain, and that leaves us really vulnerable. And like that's really the foundation of all of it is vulnerability, and that's a lot of the work that I do with women. But it's scary as all hell to feel vulnerable and not know. And so I think what I would do if you were my client is work on that first, is you being scared to death of the uncertainty and a little bit of why that looks uncertain, why that looks scary for you, and just kind of give yourself permission to live in the unknown. And it's like a gray area. And I see for a lot of women too, myself included, is that we very much live in black or white. It's all or nothing.
Right.
So that gray area, boo.
Yeah.
So that's what I would ask
time
you to
with
do.
That. Yeah, that's a hurdle I have to overcome because, as my husband says, I hate living in limbo. Limbo is so hard for me. I am just like, tell me the answer. I'm so type A. I'm like, give me the answer.
Limbo
tell me what to
is
do.
Life.
And limbo is life, and that's just so
limbo
hard.
Limbo is life.
I was reading your book, and those you talk so much about fears and overcoming fears. And I, as I'm reading this book, I'm like, oh, Andrea, you're so speaking to me right now because it's the fear of being judged. It's the fear of criticism from others. It's the fear of, oh, did I make the right decision this time? It's
what
the fear of, am I messing
think?
My life up worse? What's everyone going to think? I have such a hard time with that because I live my life so publicly, and I hate that I care so much about what other people think, but it's terrifying to me, you know?
Well, everyone does. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, oh, Gina, all you need to do is let go of what they think. Like, I care about what people think. Like, we do. Like, I wrote a blog post. And am I allowed to say bad words on your show? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. I know some people are probably listening with their kids and stuff, but I wrote a blog post. The title of it was Why I Think No One Should Actually Give Zero Fucks. Because, like, that term's getting thrown around all over the place. I'm like, no one lives like that. We care about what other people think, and I think that it's important to some extent because you're a sociopath if you really don't care at all, ever. But like, there are some people that are paralyzed by it. So what does the middle ground look like, and what is the solution? And I will tell you, the solution is to not just let it go. The solution is to live one day at a time. And sometimes even that's too hard. So it's 1 hour at a time. And so for you, I would look at, like, I would want to know, how often are you tapping into like your intuition, and like what is your kind of focal point that you use as some kind of guiding light, like the universe or whatever it is? Like, I don't know what your beliefs are, but you don't have to believe in God. You don't have to, you know, believe in Jesus and all that stuff. But like, some kind of deep down, do you know that you are being taken care of? That's what I'd want to know.
Yeah, that it's in it. I do. I'm not, you know, I'm an atheist, except that I feel like there's this weird energy in the universe that sort of guides you. And I feel like the universe just kind of clears paths for you. And I tend to believe that where you're supposed to be is where you end up. And I always feel like, even though, you know, that old saying, like, you know, you just, when you get there, it may not have looked like what you thought it was going to look like, but you tend to end up where you're supposed to be. And I've always felt that. No matter how many times I've screwed up. Yeah, so I have some of that, but oh God, that fear. So, you know, we actually do have a couple callers, and I'm really excited to bring them on the line. So we'll get right back to this. But I'm going to introduce caller from the 585 area code. Caller from 585, can you please give us your name and tell us why you're calling in?
Go ahead, caller.
Okay, maybe they got nervous. All right, let's try caller from the 608 area code. Caller from 608, give us your name and tell us why you're calling in. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, give us your name and tell us why you're calling in. We're just not having any lucky callers today. Okay, I'm going to put them back on hold and maybe try them again and later. Okay.
I left a number on Instagram just a little while ago, so I think people might have thought that was the only way to call in and listen. So maybe that's why they're shy.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just keep trying we'll see. Okay, so get me back to this fear thing. What are the steps that you use to overcome when you're thinking about all the different types of fears that someone goes through? Someone comes to you, you know, as a life coach and says, okay, I'm terrified of what people will think. I'm terrified of failure. How do you get them through those?
Well, it's really easy. It's just like an hour phone call. And no, I'm just kidding. it's a lifelong process, I will tell you that. And you were going to write down the steps, right? No, but I do have a philosophy that you can take notes on and sort of see, because I love metaphors, and I have this tree metaphor. And so what it looks like is this. So most of us live our life, and our foundation, like our roots, if you will, the soil that we use is fear. And if you plant a tree there, the trunk is going to look like negative self-talk. So those are the messages that we get from fear. Everyone thinks you're an idiot. You screwed up again. You have gained too much weight. You can't wear that bathing suit. Your boss thinks you're a joke. Everyone's like that. Those kinds of things that we hear pretty regularly. And I don't know about you, but I, for 30-something years, thought that that was just my truth, and that was it. And then I got into this work and realized, like, oh, my God, I can actually work on managing these thoughts. So I'll get back to that in a second. So there's your tree trunk, is your negative self-talk. So what seeds and the leaves and the bushy part of your tree are behaviors. And those behaviors tend to be control. That's what we were just talking about. People pleasing. Mm-hmm. So that's like doing everything for everyone else and acting differently than you really are truly authentically are. And it's also trying to fit in to places because there's a difference between belonging and fitting in. Fitting in is when you're acting different, you know, and we've all done that. Perfectionism is another behavior that we default into. Isolation, that's when we feel like shit, and then we, instead of reaching out, we hide, and we don't tell anyone what's going on and just kind of expect it to go away. And then another big one is comparison. We spend a lot of time comparing ourselves to others and feeling badly because of that. So all of those five behaviors that I just mentioned, which are extremely common for the women that come to me, what the results of those behaviors, the air, if you will, from this tree is worthiness, is not feeling good enough. You feel like you don't measure up, and you just feel like shit all around. So then the cycle starts all over again, because when you don't feel like you're enough, what is your foundation? Your foundation is fear. And so it's just this never-ending cycle. So what I work with women on is coming from a place of courage. And so when your foundation is courage, you have more empowering self-talk. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that your negative self-talk goes away. It doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of managing it and recognizing when it happens and choosing different thoughts. And then in the tree, you have things like surrendering to what is. Not that I was just talking to you about. That's the opposite of control and like trusting your intuition. It's things like striving for excellence instead of perfectionism. It's tapping into your self-expression and your own creativity, which I see you do a lot, you know, as a writer and, you know, working on your house and even cooking and, you know, rocking out, like all of those things, that's tapping into your creativity. And basically when we're engaging in behaviors that are not like the other ones that I mentioned, mm-hmm. so much better. And I will tell you that courage and fear are not mutually exclusive. Like, it's not black or white. You don't pick one or the other. You have both at the same mm-hmm. time most of the time. Because I used to think that, oh, those courageous and confident women, oh, and P.S., courage is confidence. It's basically the same thing. And so I used to look at confident women and think like, okay, they were either born that way or they when they turned 45 that happened or something was going on with them that I didn't know about. But really what I've learned is that to be courageous is to be afraid. And every single time, like when I wrote my book, I was scared shitless.
Yeah, I bet.
it's still scary, you know, I'm about to write a second one and it's still scary. So all of these things, like every time your life gets up-leveled, it's scary. And I don't know if we ever get to, I've talked to so many people that are successful and like you look at them and you're like, oh my gosh, that's an amazing person. And there's no such thing as fearless. There's just not. Yeah. I hate that word, fearless. And so I just talked a lot. And so that's like kind of my whole philosophy on the work that I do with women.
Well, that's amazing. And I think that that's a really, it's a very nuanced approach. And I really appreciate that. And I want to talk to you about the difference, because this is a thing I have a hard time with. The difference between intuition and negative self-talk, because mm-hmm. I'm going to do this in just a second, because we actually do have another caller I'm going to try to bring on the line. I want to make sure that we do get people's questions in. But think about this for a second. The difference between intuition, knowing this is, you know, maybe not the right choice, or your brain just being a bastard and just trying to convince you it's mm-hmm. not a good choice. And this is what I struggle with so much right now. But we have a caller from area code 201. So I'm going to bring on this caller from area code 201. Caller from 201, do you have a question for us?
I actually do. I'm so glad to get through.
Yay. Tell us your name.
Hi.
And tell us where you're calling.
Yay. Okay. My name is Gail. I live on Long Island and I work in New York City and I have a New Jersey phone number. So there you go.
okay. Great.
I have an interesting question for you. Hi. I generally feel like I am a very confident woman. I've been through a lot in my life and I really know who I am and I'm very happy with myself, but I have some problems. I have a cousin, her name is, we'll call her Jane, just in case anyone's listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 44, she's 51. Ever since I've been young, she's never liked me. I don't think there is nothing I can do in my life to make her be nice to me. I will always be kind and courteous because she just doesn't deserve anything more than that, and I can't go down to her level. I guess my mm-hmm. question is, how do I stop letting her actions against me affect me? And I guess to give you an example, we all live in the same community, or we're from the same community. And this weekend she had a big Memorial Day party. She invited basically everybody, even one of my siblings, and she did not invite mm-hmm. me. And in fact mm-hmm. told her brother, well, you know, my mother passed away 2 months ago. And while we're there sitting Shiva, she looks at me and goes, oh, stop flashing your ring, because they all think that I married very well and I've got more mm. money than I do. And I'm like, you think I'm flashing my ring? And she's like, well, you do it all mm. the time. So that gives you an idea of the kind of person that she is. And mm-hmm. even like uh-huh. When I got married 5 years ago, I was at her house or something. We were chatting. And I looked at a picture from her wedding. And I said, wow, the one thing that I remember are the colors of your wedding and the flowers. Your flowers were so beautiful. And I meant that. And she goes, well, of course you like my colors. You wore a hot pink dress so people would think that you were a bridesmaid. Now, mind you, mm-hmm. she got married 20 years ago. So that's why I want to give you an idea of the things that I'm dealing with her. So I I don't have a right to be upset that she didn't invite me to the party because I shouldn't have, I don't expect it. But it still hurts. It still hurts that her actions affect me sometimes, and I don't want them to. So,
well, I think,
what's your
advice? Well, I would look at that first. Like, I think that first and foremost, like, you do have a right to be upset because you're a human being and you have feelings. But I wanted to address that first because I think so many times we hear this as advice, like, in the internet or whatever, where we're like, it's even one of the Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And I'm so glad I saw an interview he did with Ellen, and she was like, okay, tell us how to do that because that seems impossible. And he said, I don't expect anyone to not be hurt and have things sting, but what I am saying is don't let those things, like, destroy you and sort of sweep you away and let it dictate your life. So I'm glad that he differentiated that because I was also under the impression, I'm like, okay, who are these robots that don't take anything personally? Because we're all walking around all emo, and, you know, it's like we just are. So I wanted to say that first and foremost. Secondly, have you ever had a conversation with her about this?
I no, because I don't think it's worth it.
Okay. Mm. I feel like you just never know. You never know, like, what might happen. So before, if you were my client, I would challenge you to actually do that. And I wouldn't just say, like, go tomorrow, Gail, and call her up. It would be like we would gear up for it. And first and foremost, I would want you to own anything that you need to own. If there's anything that you have ever done in the last 44 years of your life that you need to make amends for or apologize for, I think first, and I would say, if it were me, I would say the first thing I need to tell you is that this conversation is long overdue, things I'm about to say, and I'm sorry for that. I should have brought this to the table 20 years ago or something like that. And then I would tell her how you feel and come from a place 100% from love instead of being defensive. And all I would want is for you to, at the end of that conversation, be able to walk away proud of the woman that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then from then on, it allows you to say what you need to say and be proud of yourself. Because I think that so many of us, and, you know, this could be a whole other conversation, but a lot of the work I do, too, is around values and, like, the things that are really important about the way that we live our life and how we show up as a human being. And I guarantee that, you know, anyone who follows myself or Gina, like, courage is one of your values, whether we're living it or not. And it's courageous to have those hard conversations. Trust me, I don't like them either. Like, I have to have my own friends and coaches like, Andrea, did you have that conversation with so-and-so? I'm like, no, because it's scary and I don't want to. But it's these hard conversations that we have to have, and that's really what integrity and honesty and authenticity are, common values. And in those conversations, again, if you can just walk away knowing that you have said your piece, that if, you know, if you got hit by a bus tomorrow or she got hit by a bus tomorrow, you would know that you said everything that you need to say from a place of love and kindness. And then from there, it's up to you. And, you know, I also recommend writing letters maybe that you'll never send. If you're pissed, write her a letter and let her have it and put it away somewhere or burn it or things like that. There's exercises, different exercises like that to do, but I think that also it might be interesting to look at, I mean, this is kind of teetering on the realm of therapy, but I think sometimes when we get upset when people mistreat us, sometimes, not all the time, sometimes there's truth to what's going on, and that's why it kind of bites us in the ass. So it might be something to look at. If anything she says or points at you, maybe that's why it hurts, but maybe not. Just a suggestion.
It's very interesting. I mean, I'm not even sure that that would work. It's great advice if it wasn't for this person being so horrible. To even give you another example, my sister passed away. Her husband passed away. My mother has custody of my nephew, and now my mother passed away. So through my mother being sick for the past 6 months, through a series of events, she heard that I had offered one of our neighbors $100,000 to take my nephew. And I tried to call her and say, you know, I heard this. I'm not really sure what's going on, but I just want to clear this up with you and make sure you know that this didn't happen. And she didn't even have the courage to even call me back. So it did not happen, of course. But here she is, and then she told her mother and her brother and all, and, like, and who are all my cousins and my aunts and my uncles. And I'm like, why would she – She won't even...
Because she doesn't... it doesn't sound... I'm going to cut you off for a second because it doesn't even sound like she's of sound mind. Like, she's not... it sounds like there might be, like, some mental illness or something going on where... I don't know if it's a personality disorder or something like that. Do you think that might be the case with her?
Possibly. I mean, she's very strong. Everybody's afraid of her. God forbid you should cross her. She's angry and nasty to everybody if she doesn't like you. And if she likes you, she'll give you the shirt off of her back. But she just decided she hates me. And, you know, and that's why I'm saying I wouldn't even have a problem having the courage to go up there and say, you know, Jody, you invited my brother. And I want to say it really did hurt my feelings. I don't know if I ever did anything to hurt you or to slight you. And I apologize for that because I'd like us to have a good relationship. I don't even know if she would care.
Yeah.
Can I jump in for a second? So this is Gina. Can I just jump in for a second? So
yeah,
I have experience with having, people who follow me know that I was not raised by my own bio mom. And the reasons are that, you know, there's a lot of mental illness there, personality disorder, things untreated. And I have to say, so I cut off contact completely after having years of very, very little contact, and what contact there was very tumultuous. But I cut off all contact 11 years ago after. But I will say this. I will say that I feel good having done that because I got to a place in my life where I knew that I had done everything that I possibly could have done. And I had to walk away for my own sanity. And I just put it on the table and with my husband and said, okay, this person, I can no longer even acknowledge the existence of this person, which is why I don't say her name. You know, when I'm referenced, it's bio mom and only that, you know, that was the person that gave birth to me and I don't have a relationship there anymore. But it came to the point where I just realized that this relationship is not going to happen in a way that keeps me a healthy person. So I had to just end it. And I'd say if you feel like you've done everything that you can, then maybe now the time would be the time to just say, okay, that's a person that I used to know that's not a part of my life anymore, and just avoid when you can. Otherwise, if you feel like this is a really important relationship to have, trying to take that step that Andrea talked about of, you know, at least establishing that last point of contact, that, you know, that conversation that says, okay, I have come to this from a place of acknowledging everything that I may have done, laying it all on the table. And then I feel like from my own personal experience, it was after I did that was when I could walk away feeling like I had, that there was closure for me, that, okay, I've done everything. This is no longer my responsibility anymore. So if you are still feeling some sense of responsibility, I would say then try to have that conversation. But if you're not, if you're past the point of feeling any responsibility, then I would say, try to imagine your life just with that person being someone you used to know. That's how I think of it. Gail, I really want to thank you so much for calling in. I want to make sure that I get back to Andrea's question about the intuition versus, what did I say, versus the fear of making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the thing that I struggle with because the intuition versus the negative self-talk. How do you tell your clients to make the distinction between, knowing that something is a good or a bad idea, or, you know, especially a bad idea, or it just being something that they're telling themselves is a bad idea so that they can avoid any discomfort?
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one. And I've written about this before, and there's actually a chapter in my book where I go over it. And what I tell my clients is that fear typically, and what I'm more specifically talking about, the inner critic, that voice is more on a loop, and it's typically frantic. Like, what if you can't get another job? And what if this was all for nothing? And now you all have a student loan debt? And what, you know, are we gonna have to move? Like that type of makes you want to crawl out of your skin. And it's usually panic, and it's typically all up in your head. And most of the time, that's where we live. You know, you see all these, you know, woo-woo spiritual people, like the mind-body connection. And it's like, I'm with you. Like I'm up there most of the time in my head. It is just now, I just turned 40 and I'm like, okay, Andrea, like we need to do something, like this whole meditation thing, like let's get on that wagon. Because there's so much value to it and really tapping into your body. And so if it's from your intuition, it typically feels like it comes from, that's what I call it, a gut feeling. It's inexplainable. Mm-hmm. You just don't no. And usually if someone asks you the right questions, it'll kind of blurt out of your mouth without you even really thinking about it. For instance, I was in a legal battle, if you will, with I have a trademark around my business name, and someone else was trying to use it, and they can't because it's trademarked, and it was like this fight back and forth, and I had this lawyer, and I was like, oh, I don't want to fight anymore, and we were moving, and it was like all this stuff, and some of my colleagues were like, no, you need to sue her, and all this stuff, and I was like, I don't really want to, and you know, and so what ended up happening is I had a coach friend ask me, she's like, okay, what is the fear? And I was like, okay, the fear is that she's going to come in and like steal my brand and piggyback off my SEO and all this stuff. And she's like, what is your intuition saying? And like, my intuition is saying that it's really not that big of a deal. And that's it. So it's sometimes it's just asking you or having someone else ask you those questions. Like, what are you really afraid of? And getting all of it out, have it come out of your mouth, because when it's like swirling around in your head, it's just like this tornado and you cannot decipher the two. So sometimes it helps just asking yourself the question. If you like to journal, that's helpful. If you like to draw, that can be helpful. Like, a creative process typically comes from your intuition. And usually your inner critic and fear doesn't feel good. I think I already said that. But it's like, it feels like shit. And intuition is more of a whisper. It's hard to explain. Mm. I mean, who can explain intuition? Yeah.
Right. Gut feeling, you know, that's the way people usually describe it. But yeah, sometimes I feel like, and I think it's especially difficult when you're a person who suffers depression and anxiety, as I do, so many of us do, because you have so many voices in your head that are constantly trying to tear you down. And it's hard to know, okay, is this that voice that's tearing me down? Is this the anxiety? Or is this just healthy fear? Is this my intuition telling me that something is not right about this, that I need to make changes? And that's what I struggle so much with. And I know so many of my readers do too. And it's hard, but I do feel like I can't figure out how, but I do feel like there have been times where I've been able to go, okay, no, this is the thing that I need to do. And then I've done that and it's worked out. And you know, but it is that. And so I've been going through this sort of, you know, do I write a book that I've been meaning to write for years? You know, do I take time off and do that? Or do I keep looking for a job? Or do I start this business that I've been thinking about? And I've been weighing all the pros and cons. And I always wonder, people that start businesses, I bet you work with a lot of them. And I know that you talked about one in your book, about a woman, you know, thinking about leaving her job and wondering, you know, oh my God, do I do this? That fear of jumping into a business, I'm sure has to be there for everybody. Do you ever see someone who is not fearful, or is it across the board, starting a business is always going to be freaky for everybody? Or are there those people that just know it's the right move?
I think both. I think even the latter, what you just said, the people that know it's the right move, they're even scared. Starting your own business, I think that there's a lot of heart in it, and there's also the reality of it, that it's difficult. And, you know, I never tell people, like, just quit your job. It'll be great.
Right.
Follow your heart and you'll never work a day in your life. I think that's such BS sometimes, because owning my own business has been the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life. It's harder than marriage. It's not harder than parenting. I will say parenting's harder, but I think that, yes, it's scary. It's scary economically. In a lot of different ways, but I don't know if that was helpful or not, but it's just your normal, if that's what you were.
Yeah, that's what, you know, that's what it is. I feel like so many of us, this is why blogging has become such a huge industry. It's that we're out there looking for the reflection in the mirror of someone just to tell us what we're feeling is normal. And that's what
it
I want.
Normal.
I want, you know, someone, it's like whether you're, you know, opening a Subway franchise or you're, you know, starting a new birth business, like, I just want to know, did anyone just walk right into it and go, oh, this is clearly the right decision. I have no fear whatsoever, because I'm looking for that.
It all goes back to that big word that I was saying earlier, and it's vulnerability, because, like, and that's the basis of what I do. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the work of Dr. Brené Brown. She had a very famous TED Talk that's been viewed over like 20 million times. It's one of like the top TED Talks. And she's done 14 years of research, and it's all based on courage and fear, vulnerability and shame. And like, vulnerability is so scary for us because we are we can be catapulted into shame. And shame is like that full contact emotion that we all have that nobody likes to talk about, that none of us want. And we've all felt it. So that's what we're afraid of. That's what we're running for. That's why we fall into perfectionism and people pleasing and isolation and all those things I mentioned before. Because life, to be human is to be vulnerable. To start a business is to be vulnerable. To get on this phone call with you today is to be vulnerable. And so if we aren't practicing behaviors that allow us to tap into the courage that we have, like one of those things is what we were just talking about, like intuition. Another one is being still and calm. And which I know, Gina, I was diagnosed with severe anxiety disorder in 03. So I'm with you, sister. So it's like that. And it took me a long time to realize, like, oh, like actually practicing being still helps with anxiety and these running thoughts, this constant fear that I have. And so it's really, again, a one day at a time gig where we just try our best and we fail and we mess up and it's imperfect and it's messy, but we're all in this together. And I think the more that we talk about it, the better we all are, because we need to sort of find our way back to each other as humans, and especially as women living in a culture that is so hard on us. I'm going to get on my soapbox in a second, so cut me off.
No, I love that you talk about that, especially as women, because, you know, people keep telling me, oh, men, you know, there's these studies that say that men apply for jobs that they're only like 20% qualified for, where women will only apply for jobs that they're like 80% qualified for. So men are bigger risk takers. And I actually did a study on this a couple of years ago for a post, just looking at, you know, societies in which there is a patriarchal society. Women are not as big risk takers as men are, or are not seen that way. And in societies where it's matriarchal, actually women are the bigger risk takers, and they're rewarded for that. And so, but women in our society are not rewarded for really anything, let alone taking risks. You know, we're shamed for everything that we do. So it's very difficult to feel vulnerable because I feel like we're constantly on the defense all the time, needing so much to protect ourselves from this like onslaught of constant criticism. It's like, you just can't do anything right. And I, like, you know, even with this diet that I'm on, you know, I use the word diet loosely. It's really just like us eating whole foods and trying to, you know, change our kind of behaviors of, you know, we had this really bad habit of eating pasta with like $3 Walgreens, you know, brand sauce every single night while I was in grad school, and then washing it down with like an entire bag of cookies. Like, that's just not healthy for anybody. So we're like, we kind of need to make some changes here. We really need to get more fruits and vegetables in our diet. So I did this like quote unquote sugar detox for 10 days just to see if we like we could make some radical changes that and hopefully like something would stick. But it's like doing this, I'm being like food shamed all over the place. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. You know, you're doing it wrong. You're not doing it good enough. And it's like, I've had to protect myself against the criticism of like, okay, I'm sharing this journey because I think it might be helpful to other people. But yet I also have to try to insulate myself from a lot of the comments. And that's just one tiny example of how, of just women in general, I feel like we cannot do anything right. And I know you probably see this. And so how, I mean, in your practice, do you see more women than men? Do you approach things differently?
I only see women.
You only see women.
I only work with women in my one-on-one in classes. What did you say? Why?
And why?
You know, it's kind of a funny story. Like, I had some creepy things go on, like, in the very beginning of my practice. I had some guys that wanted me to coach them, and then I realized they wanted more than me to coach them. So I'm like, I think I'm just going to stick to women. And it just sort of went from there. And, you know, I was a new mom too when I started my practice, and so I really connected with women. It just ended up that way. But yeah, it wasn't super intentional.
And what do you tell women about the difference between the way they may need to approach things than a man who might be a bigger risk taker or who might apply for a job he's wholly unqualified for, just because men seem to do that?
You know, I don't know if I've ever had that conversation with a client or even public online. I keep my eyes on the focus of women tapping into their inherent values, which always includes courage, because if we don't have courage, then we can't align ourselves with our other values like creativity and intuition and, you know, honesty, integrity, love, whatever the rest of yours are. So that's really what I stick to. And it's interesting that you say that, because I want to share a quick story, because when I first, I think my first realization that we as women, there was like kind of like teams, like we were divided, was when I started learning about attachment parenting after my son was born. And I mean, I bought like Dr. Sears' book or something and started learning about it and doing all, you know, some of the things that encompass attachment parenting and sort of got onto some online groups and quickly realized that there were some radicals out there. I was like, okay, so, you know, and it's like, well, if you don't do all things attachment parenting, then we don't want you to be a part of our group. And I really felt that way. And I actually had an idea for a book and I broke it down. And just, I had the outline ready and everything. I wanted to write like this girlfriend's guide to country or city girl's guide to crunchy living or something like that, where it was like, it's okay if you don't embrace all of the things, but here they are if you want to parent this way. And I just, that was really like my first awakening to, we need to be more, and I felt myself kind of getting on that bandwagon of like, you know, boo to the formula feeders. And I was like, wait a minute, that doesn't really align with who I am. You know, I'm like, I'm really a kind and compassionate person, and I just want to help you. And like, well, this parenthood is hard, damn. So I just look at it too. It's like, if we were all like on a 5K together, like we're running on the track, a group of us, and somebody fell down, we wouldn't stomp on her and yell at her and told her she did it wrong and she needs to go back and sit down. Like, no, we would all stop and be like, oh my God, are you okay? Do you need help? Like, can we help you up? You know, it's like,
yes,
if you are the person that it needs, I don't want to hang out with you. So it's just,
right.
To me, it's like, what if, and it's just the whole, I don't need to get on the whole soapbox of the online world, but people wouldn't say the things to your face that they would online. And so that's why I try to come at it too. It's just, just be kind, people. Just be kind to yourself and be kind to each other, and then we're all good.
Yeah, I love your 5K analogy because I feel like that is so true. Like, if you're all, you know, running side by side and someone did fall down, you wouldn't be like, you fucking suck.
You did it wrong.
How dare
yeah.
you? How dare you? You totally did it wrong. You're not a good mother.
Right, you got too close. Yeah, you wore the wrong shoes. Boo you.
Right.
No, we would help each other.
Right. We would help each other. That's, oh my God, that's so true. And I love that you talk about that. I want you to bring this all back to your book because we've got like a couple minutes left and I'm going to go over it a little bit today because I really want you to tie this all back into, now it's 52 ways to live a kick-ass life. And it's 52 chapters is right. You address a different way in each one of your chapters. Is that correct?
Yep, and they're super short. They're about 850 words long, and you can just open it up to any chapter and start reading. I really wanted it to be like the bathroom book that you just like have in your car or the bathroom where you just get up and can read.
And I can vouch for it is very easy reading. I started reading it, and suddenly I was like, I'm on chapter 12 already. Like it goes really quickly, and it's really insightful. And I want to know how you came up with these 52 ways. I mean, I was your friend on Facebook all, you know, through the process of birthing this book. And I know that it was an incredibly difficult process, which makes me nervous and excited if I try to do the same thing to birth my own book. Because I watched you go through this like painstaking process, and I'm like, that doesn't seem easy at all. But you did it, and that's really inspiring. But I want to know how. You know, I know there's no good formula for it, but I mean, really, how did you get yourself through that period of time?
It's funny. Like first of all, I got sober. I identify with being an alcoholic. Like I'm just a classic addict. So many different vices I've had over the years. And finally, like booze was my last one. And I'm like, okay, I need to just abstain forever. So that happened. And I just woke up one day and I'm like, I've wanted to do this since I was 11. It's time to sugar get off the pot. And so, I had written a blog post, like 49 ways to live a kick-ass life. And I took that blog post and edited it and had the idea, the publisher wanted it to be 52, so I came up with a few more, and really it's just all the wisdom that I had been in, you know, endowed with in my 37 years when I wrote the book, I wrote it all out, and my next book I'm going to dive deeper into like 5 or 6 of the chapters, but yeah, it's a bunch of just different little tools and tips, and I talk about solutions and not just the problems, so I wanted it to be helpful.
That's so awesome. You know, we do have one more caller. I want to try to get her on really quickly. The show is supposed to end in 30 seconds, but I'm going to go over today. So we have this caller from 585. I don't know if she wants to come on and talk to us or not, but let's see. A caller from 585. Do you want to come on and talk to us?
Yes. Hi, I'm here.
Hi.
Hi, great. Let us know your name and what you're calling in about.
Hi, my name is Bridget. I did the Kick-Ass Courage Project with Andrea. and awesome. I loved it. I got a lot out of it. So the reason that I called and I'm listening is because I think that I am the picture of a midlife crisis. I just turned 40, dealing with a lot of like restlessness, just struggling with finding my spirituality a little bit, which is helping. I'm married. I have three daughters. But I feel like I'm at a crossroads where I need to do something that maybe feeds my soul a little bit. And I keep waiting. I've done a lot of reading on the universe. I believe in all that. And I have no clear direction, and it's frustrating me. It's making me feel like I'm lost.
So, well, Andrea, what would you tell Bridget about finding direction?
You fixed that in 30 seconds.
I just have empathy for where you're at, and it sounds like you are going through a hard time. And my advice, and if you're my client, I would give you lots of homework to spend time every morning, afternoon, evening, wherever it works in your day, to either, you know, exercise, meditate, garden, do yoga, something where you can be still, try to tap into your wise self or your intuition, or just try to have no thoughts at all, because I think a lot of times that's what helps us just listen to the universe. And really, I think that the more we search for an answer and the more we beg the universe for it and the more anxiety we have around it, the more resistance we have to actually hearing it, and we are just causing more of a problem. So I say that gently because I've done it. I do it all the time. I'm sure you're doing it, and I don't want to make you wrong for it. I just want to kind of make you aware of it and try your best to be still. And do you journal? Like, I would do that too, just like free write anything you can. And also, Bridget,
I
like,
do.
Know
I
that.
I jot things down.
Yeah, like,
and
you,
I do. I work out. I lift weights, so it's not really, it's calming to me. But it's what I do. I joke that it's kind of my church. You know, that's where I go, and I feel like I really am in my most comfortable state. But I deal with this restlessness all the time, and I deal with bad choices.
I hate to sound super cliche, but it's really this too shall pass. And if you're going through hell, keep going, and it will pass.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. I've gotten, I work with a psychoanalyst who's excellent. But,
good.
And I did write to you on Facebook. You were, I got so much out of the program. And
good.
Yeah, I really have enjoyed it and everyone's story. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for calling
you,
Bridget.
And hey, Gina, if your audience is interested, I'm running, it starts on the 1st. It's free. It's the Kick Out Courage Project 7-Day Challenge. It's free. If you just go to my website, it's on the homepage, or yourkickasslife.com/7-day-challenge, all one word. And it's free. It starts on Monday.
That's awesome. You know what? I am going to join that because I really can use the project. So I will.
And I will share my out too in the Facebook group.
You better. You really better. I need calling out. I mean, you know, not in the you made all the wrong food choices kind of way, but in the
no, like, are you doing the work? Yeah, it's basically it's a worksheet with a challenge every day for 7 days, and it for a lot of people it's life changing. But you actually have to do the work, like the worksheet.
And I'm so type A, if you put me, to like, give me homework, I will do it, and I will do a really good job. And then maybe by the end of it, I'll actually have my direction figured. This big question mark, maybe I'll have some of that figured out. So I want to thank you so much for coming on with me today and staying on with me. I know the show ran over, and we kind of ran out of live recording time, but this should all be available on the podcast. So Andrea Owen, her book is called 52 Ways to Live Your Kick-Ass Life. Her website is yourkickasslife.com. Go there, be inspired if you're in the area. Now, Andrea, do you offer life coaching to anyone who's outside your area?
Oh, yeah. Like it's all over the world. Yep, we managed to get on Skype together.
Awesome. So anywhere you are in the world, you can have Andrea Owen, certified professional coach, as your life coach and get some one-on-one information and help from her. You guys, thank you so much again for joining me. Thank you so much to all my callers who called in and talked to us. And I will catch you next time. I don't know what my show is for next week yet, but follow my Facebook page, facebook.com/feministbreeder, and we will get you hooked up there. Thanks again to Andrea Owen. See you next time.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to The Feminist Breeder and Friends. Check us out live every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Central Time, where we'll discuss women's health, parenting issues, and oh, so much more.